so much, Nick. Thank you so much, Nick, for the introduction. And as was said, my name is Risa Milne. I am a recovered alcoholic. My sobriety date is March 3rd, 2004. My home group is the PPG Webster meeting. We meet on Zoom at Sundays at 9:30 Eastern. So I believe right now that would be 6:30 a.m. for you Arizona people. So if you're up that early in the morning, we'd love to have you. We are a big book study group. I love the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I love to teach the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I love to study it and I love to practice it. And, you know, this isn't actually all about me. This is all about a story of God and how my relationship with God has helped save my life through the instructions in the book. So I am going to just let everybody know that because I get very distracted sometimes, you may see a white fluff come up on me. That is my bunny. Because I know if I see something like that, I'm going to be like, what is going on? That is my bunny. And normally we are here giving them treats. And so he may be thinking that that's what he's going to get. So just letting y'all know that. And, so I'm going to start by, there's a passage in, on page 73, Into Action that, really sums up my life before alcohol, my life during my drinking, and also my life in recovery. And it is on page 73 in the middle. More than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. He is very much the actor. To the outer world, he presents his stage character. This is the one he likes his fellows to see. He wants to enjoy a certain reputation, but knows in his heart he doesn't deserve it. The inconsistency is made worse by the things he does on his sprees. Coming to his senses, he is revolted at certain episodes he vaguely remembers. These memories are a nightmare. He trembles to think someone might have observed him. As fast as he can, he pushes these memories far inside himself. He hopes they will never see the light of day. He is under constant fear and tension, and that makes for more drinking. And the reason I read that is I just celebrated 18 years sober. And 2 years ago, I can't promise you that I would have been here. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I did not stick around the first time I came in. And eventually, I wanted what this program had to offer. I got a sponsor. She took me through the steps, and I believe that I recovered from alcoholism at that time. And when I say that I recovered from alcoholism, what I mean is I recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body. And so, you know, in the first step, we learned that alcoholism is a twofold illness. We learned that we have an allergy to alcohol. When we put it in our body, we cannot control the amount that we are we put in our body. And when we don't have it in our bodies, we have no power and choice whether I drink or not. My brain is really wonky, and normal things like, you know, consequences and stuff like that, that doesn't keep me from drinking. All it does is, you know, I might get a little fear here and there, but as many people know, fear is not going to keep an alcoholic sober, and neither is frothy emotional appeal, unfortunately. So I suffer from a disease that does not make any sense, and I need a solution that is not very sensical. And so I recovered from that, which only means that I no longer need to put, I no longer put alcohol in my body. So I no longer have the allergy when I am drinking. And not when I'm drinking, I no longer have the allergy as long as I don't put a drink in my body. And I have recovered from that state of mind in which I feel that, you know, I can do it differently. I can, it's not going to burn me this time, and here's how. And so that is what I've recovered from. And I found in Alcoholics Anonymous, oftentimes people continually say that they're recovering. And I will tell you that my story is about being recovered in Alcoholics Anonymous and going back to recovering in Alcoholics Anonymous, because I found myself at 16 years sober, desperate for a drink of alcohol, getting to a point where I was no longer grateful for the sober life that I had been given. I no longer wanted the sober life that I was given. And oftentimes I would talk at meetings and I'd go to my sponsor and I'd say, I really, really want to drink again. And they would say things really well-meaningly. They would say things like, if you have 10 problems and you drink, you have 11, which in my case, actually, if I have 10 problems and I drink, I have 100. You know, they would say things like, just don't drink and go to a meeting. And they would say things like pray and meditate and go to God. And those were all wonderful. Those were all absolutely wonderful, wonderful things that they were trying to do. And they really, really loved me. And they really, really cared about me. However, what I was not hearing, even if it was being said to me, was work with other people. Do a 10th step, do an 11th step. You can pray and meditate, but if you don't have that relationship with your higher power any longer, which I no longer had, you're not gonna, it's almost to no avail, because I'm not really praying. I'm not really meditating anymore. I'm not talking or building this relationship at all. And so I found myself at 16 years sober, which just happened to be at the time COVID hit, sitting there with hand sanitizer in my lap in the car. I had just come back into my car from going to the grocery store and sitting there putting hand sanitizer on my hands, wanting to lick it off. And honestly, I really don't know why I didn't. I just eventually, you know, had gotten to a point where I'd be going to meetings. I would be talking about the big book. I would be talking about God. I would be talking about working with other people. I would be talking about all these things. But I would leave the meetings feeling like a complete fake and a complete phony. I would, you know, feel like I was enjoying a certain reputation, but knew in my heart I didn't deserve it. I was lying to every single person in my life. I was presenting a different stage character in all of my aspects of life. I wasn't being honest with my sponsor. I wasn't even really talking to my sponsor at this point. And I had gotten to a point where was I absolutely miserable, and I was absolutely just completely deflated from living my life. I got to a point where I didn't see any solution for me anymore in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. All I saw was that in order to get the same spiritual experience that I had at the beginning, I needed to drink again. Alcoholics Anonymous wasn't going to work for me unless I drank again. And I'm happy to sit here and tell you that is not the case at all. And, you know, my story, there newcomers who are in this room, you guys are the most important people. I love you. You are the lifeblood of Alcoholics Anonymous. My story is for the people in AA who have just become so disillusioned with the program and feeling like it's not working for you anymore. And so that's what happened to me. And my story is that, for the first month of COVID, I, you know, got on Zoom here and there. I would turn it off. I would turn my camera off. I wouldn't pay attention. I'd be on my phone. I really didn't care what anybody was saying. And I was just kind of doing it because that's what I do. I go to meetings. I go to meetings and I talk at meetings, and I go to more meetings and I talk at more meetings. And that was what I was doing. And unless I had something to say, I didn't feel I needed to be there. You know, my ego and my pride had just risen to a place of undeniable insanity, absolute insanity. And what happened is, you know, when my husband would come home, I had my kids. I didn't want my children anymore. I didn't want to be married anymore. I wished that I wasn't a mother. I wished none of these things. And so when my husband came home from work, because he was an essential worker, I would go up to my room and just kind of be like, I'm done. I am done for the day. I am done for life. Life is done for me right now. And that's it. And when he left, I would kind of come to again and be there for my family as I needed to be. And I was miserable. I was absolutely miserable. I was suffering from depression. I was suffering from anxiety and full of fear, full of just craziness. And, you know, at one point during that time, I realized that other than my children, I was completely alone in this world, absolutely and utterly completely alone. And it was just me and God. And when I realized that, I realized how screwed I was because I didn't have this relationship any longer. I really believe that in order to have a really good relationship with anything and anybody, you need to be present. You need to be present. You need to reach out. You need to be there. And any relationship that I've had, if I go a month, if I go a few months, if I go a year, if I go a few years without that communication, that relationship is going to suffer pretty badly. And that's where I was, completely alone with my higher power and without that relationship. And I knew I was screwed. And instead of getting into action right away, instead of, you know, having this realization, instead of having the knowledge that I had just gotten, or like that was like kind of burst upon me, I went deeper into this mire of self-pity. And what happened was I was in bed on a Saturday, and there was circuit speakers starting to speak on Zoom. And there was this one woman who was speaking, and my husband happened to know who she was, and he had gotten onto the Zoom meeting, and he was listening to her, and I was woken up by him just tearing up the stairs. And he woke me up and he's like, you need to listen to this and you need to listen to it now, because this wasn't hidden that I was sick. You know, it wasn't hidden that I had become so spiritually sick. He knew how spiritually sick I was. He knew that I was not the person that he had married. And I sat there and I listened to this woman, and this woman talked about the same stuff I'm talking about now. She had double digit time, and she had gotten to a point where she wanted to drink again. And as I was listening to her, this woman was so filled with excitement and love and just utter amazement of this program, of God, of the steps. And there was this moment, just this moment, where if she had this experience and she's loving life again, and she's loving the big book, and she's loving God, and she's loving AA, maybe, just possibly, I could have that experience too. And that woman discussed that her home group was the PPG Austin meeting at the time they met on Tuesday nights. And so I went to that meeting, and I gotta tell you, I've sponsored many, 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 many women through the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, even when I was spiritually sick. And, you know, I thought I knew the book backwards and forwards and upside down, and there was no way anyone was going to tell me that I didn't know something in that book. There was actually a point where I told one of my sponsors that I knew the book better than she did, and I didn't know what she would be able to give to me because my pride and ego is that big. And she gave me a look. But, you know, and so I went to this meeting and they were reading out of the book. They were in the resentment inventory, and I was there with my book in hand. And I looked at my husband and said, what the hell are they reading? What are they reading? Because I've never heard this before. I have never looked at this before. I've never, like, what, where are they? Like, this is not what I know. And I had this realization that maybe, just maybe, I didn't know everything. Maybe, just maybe, I could be open to something new, to a new experience. And so I continued to go to that meeting, and every single time we opened that book, I was reading something completely different than I had ever read it in my whole entire life. And I was amazed. And there was people there who were excited about the big book, who had loved the big book as much as I once did, who just, you know, I'm a huge big book nerd. Like, I am a nerd. I love to know the history behind it. I love to know what the words mean. I love to know the definitions. I love to know the definitions back in the 30s. I just love it. I love it. And there's these people, and specifically there was these women who loved this book and who were talking about it. And they just were so passionate. And I sat there thinking, you know what? I want what these people have. And so I reached out to the email that they gave, and they gave me, and I said, I want to go through the book this way. And they gave me the number of a woman who, she had gotten sober in Austin, but then she now lives in Kansas City, Missouri. And I reached out to her. And at the time, I actually felt like I was such a bad scenario. Like, I had such a bad case of spiritual sickness that the only person who could possibly help me is a circuit speaker. It was insane. I was insane. And I was just like, I was just so full of myself and so full of just grandiosity that I didn't think I could be helped by anyone else. And so, you know, they gave me this number to this woman, and I was like, oh, I'll call her. But, you know, really, you know, like, I need her number. I need that woman's number. And I called my sponsor, because she is my sponsor today. And I called that woman in Kansas City, and she and I, there was just this click on the phone, you know, like, if we just mesh. And I found out that she had 16 years sober and she drank again. And it took her 7 years to get back into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, my grandiosity was shrunken because I sat there and I listened to this woman and realized that this woman had an answer for me. And here I sat 16 years sober, and here she sat 7 years sober. And in a time where I thought that only the greatest and the, you know, the best speaker could help me, and God forbid somebody with less sobriety could even help me, that was insane to me. And I started crying on the phone to her, and asked if she could help me. And she just emphatically said, absolutely, yes. And we started going through the book, and we didn't go through the book again slowly. We didn't go through the book, you know, a step a month, a step a year, you know. We went through the book very quickly. You know, and she took me right back to the first step, because the thing is, and that I didn't realize at the time, but came to realize, is I stopped believing I was powerless over alcohol. I felt that I had power over alcohol because of the self-knowledge I had about what alcoholism and AA was. Because at the time I had become a student. I had sponsors. I wasn't really listening to them very much. And I was a teacher, but I was not a practitioner of this book. I truly believed that, you know, I did steps 1 through 9, and then 10 and 11 were just extra credit. They were just extra credit. They were bonus steps. You know, you go off into meetings and those two topics come up, step 10 and 11. And very often in the meetings that I was going to, people would say, oh, I don't really do this step that well. You know, I might do it once a year. Or I might end up running up against a wall and finally doing it. And so I really, truly stopped like really being accountable in my sobriety. And the thing is I'd stopped doing the practices and the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous and stopped practicing them in all my affairs, as the second part of the 12 step talks about. And so I had to get back to basics. I had to get back to basics. And it was truly, it was an amazing experience. She took me through step three, which, you know, oftentimes when I've gone through step three with previous sponsors, and I took girls through step three as well, I would kind of brush through it really quick and be like, all right, let's keep it moving. Like, this is what it's about. And we just, you know, you're making a decision to keep going on with the steps. And I never really, truly, honestly looked at step three. And that was really the changing point to my whole sobriety, was taking a look at step three and seeing that step three isn't me being selfish and self-seeking in my drinking history. Step three is me being selfish and self-seeking in all of my life, pretty much on a daily, minute-to-minute, hour-by-hour basis. I am thinking of myself all the time, like to the most minute things, And so, you know, we read on page 61, this is, you know, I think of as the toolkit of self-will. In trying to make these arrangements, so this is about running the show, and I am a control freak to the umph degree, and I need to control you. I've got scripts for every single person in my life. If you don't follow my scripts, I am ticked off. Yet I'm not going to tell you what the script is either. You just need to know what it is. And so I have all these scripts for you. I have the design, you know, the lighting design in my head. I got, you know, the scenery in my head, and you need to know what this is, you know? And if you don't follow this, things aren't going to end well for me. They're not going to end well for you. I know what the best look of life is going to be. And so what this is talking about is, in trying to make these arrangements, our actor may sometimes be quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. I am constantly looking for validation. Okay, I am going to do nice things for you because I want you to validate me. And if you validate me, that means I'm better. I'm okay. I feel okay inside, which is not true at all. You could validate me till the cows come home, and I'm still going to feel empty inside. I'm still going to feel like this person that you're going to find out who the real me is, and you're not going to like me no matter what. And so one of the things that I used to do a lot to try and find this validation was innocent enough. It was so innocent. I love to cook, and I would love to make my husband these meals that I would find on, you know, the internet, and I would, you know, make a whole exciting thing of it. And, you know, and I would go and I'd set dinner down, and I'm really mean at this point, I'm meaning it from the bottom of my heart. I want to make a beautiful meal for my husband, for my family. And I sit down and I look at him and I stare him down until he tastes the meal. And then he'll taste the side dish, not the actual, the part that I'm really proud of, you know? And I hassle him. And I'm like, no, that's not the right part. You need to taste this part. And so he gives me this long sigh. He'll be like, you know, and he'll go and he'll eat it and he'll put it in his mouth. And if the first thing out of his mouth is not, oh my God, this is amazing, I'm done. I am about to cry. I am a miserable wreck. I can't eat anymore. I feel nauseous to my stomach, and I end up ruining dinner for everybody at the table because he didn't give me the validation that his script that I wrote said that he needed to give me. That's how selfish I am. I can see that in huge things in my life, but it's those tiny little things over and over again, not doing a 10th step, not doing an 11th step, that I became blind to. I became absolutely blind to the selfishness and self-seeking that was just absolutely ruling my life. And then, on the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. I'm doing this wonderful, lovely thing. He doesn't give me what I want. I'm not feeling right. And I'm just like, I start crying. I want to pick a fight. I want to manipulate him. I go and I make the recipe 80,000 times until I get that exact reaction that he wants. And it was those small things in my life that just kept building up and building up and building up. And what I've learned today and what I've always believed is that I am a vessel for God's words and for God's power and God's love and God's way of life to go through. My words and all of me is not the power. I am not the power. God is the power, and all I am is a vessel. And if that vessel is mucked up and with just junk of selfishness, self-centeredness, if I'm constantly in a state of self-pity and you owe me and I deserve and all of those things, God is unable to get through, you know? God is absolutely unable to get through to me or through me. And so I need to clear that out. And I'm looking for, I can't find it. Here it is. On page 55, deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. It may be obscured by calamity, by pomp, by worship of other things, but in some form or other, it is there. You know, and what I had done was cover up all of this power that I had received at one point, all of the spiritual experience that I had and awareness that I had with pomp, with circumstance, with my selfish actions, and that is the gunk that was covering my path to God. And so when she took me through this third step again, and she really nailed home just how sick I was. Is he not a victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and out of this world if it only manages well? Victim in the 1930s meant duped. I had duped myself. I was in a delusion and was lying to myself and duped myself into this delusion that I could rest. Rest in here is spelled W-R-E-S-T, which is the root word of wrestling. I am fighting. I am fighting tooth and nail for satisfaction and happiness out of the world if I only manage well. I am fighting with you. I am fighting with my children. I'm fighting with my husband. I'm fighting with people at work. And if I'm fighting, I don't know anybody in this world who is satisfied and happy as they are fighting. I certainly wasn't. And so, you know, she pointed this stuff out to me. And then we went over to 62. Selfishness and self-centeredness that we think is the root of our troubles, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. We step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. You know, that's my roots. You know, that's my roots. I think of this stuff as a tree sometimes. You know, my roots are selfishness, self-centeredness, you know, and then the trunk goes up and my branches are this fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. You know, it's the resentment, it's the fear, it's the conduct that I'm showing to other people. Those are the branches. And then all the little leaves that come off of this ugly, gnarled tree of mine are all my character defects. 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. When I'm going through my inventory process, when I'm writing my inventory and I'm going through that, it is easy for me to get off and just say, yep, my character defects are I'm selfish, I'm self-centered, I'm fearful, you know, I'm angry, you know, all of those things. However, I sat down. So after we went through this, and she had me read this for a week in the I statement out loud every single day. And there was something that happened in doing that practice, where before I even talked to her, I fell to my knees crying, realizing how selfish and self-centered that I really had become. Because I really, really just, I had gotten to a place again where I felt like I was just this victim of life. I had gotten to a place where I deluded myself that everything was just happening at me, you know? And I realized, but reading it over and over again opened my eyes to just how sick and selfish I was. You know, there's a great speaker who talks about walking around asleep, dreaming I'm awake, you know, and that's how I felt. You know, when I was awakened just a little bit, I was not fully awakened by this, but I was awakened enough, just enough to decide, you know, I fell on my knees and I prayed the third step prayer on my own, because it was just like, yes, take this. I don't want to live like this anymore. I don't want to be this person anymore. I want to make this decision that I am no longer running the show. And she gave me this inventory, and this inventory, it's called the extended inventory. It's still right out of the book, but between column 3 and column 4 is where we have a realization. And the realization is talked about. It's talked about on page 66. This was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we did not like their symptoms and the way these disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. So in that column, I take a look at the person I'm resentful to, and I am taking a look at the resentments that person had, what I had perceived had done to me. And I take a look at how had I done that to other people. And when I was able to look and see how my actions were the same as theirs, and how sick I had been, and how badly I knew I wasn't trying to hurt anybody. I knew I wasn't trying to be this awful person. I knew I wasn't trying to do that. I was so spiritually sick that I was blinded to my actions. And all I would want is forgiveness from them. So if I want forgiveness, how can I not allow them to have that same forgiveness? You know? And so I was able to look at these people in a new light. I was able to see that they are just as sick as myself, that I'm just as sick as them. I was able to be much more humbled and realize I'm just a person among people. I'm a human amongst other humans. I am an alcoholic amongst other alcoholics, and was able to be right-sized a little bit more, because all of these steps get me to a closer level of humility. All of these steps take me out of myself just a little bit more, because I need to keep going. If the third step did it all for me, I wouldn't have to keep going. If the fourth step got me to that relationship perfectly with God, I wouldn't need to keep going. That's not my story. My eyes were opened up little by little. And so we went through this inventory, and I was able to see just how human I was. Just, you know, how human I was. I'm not God. And it's so easy to say that. It's so easy to look out at this world and realize I have not created it. But it's so hard for me in my mind to realize I'm not God. I can't control the things around me. I can't control circumstances. I can't control the people. I can't expect you to have the script. And I need to allow people to have their own experiences because it's God's world, not my world. It's not Reese's world, you know? And I don't know how things are supposed to come together in a puzzle, you know? And so, you know, that tapestry, only my creator can see. I see this teeny tiny little bit. I don't see the big picture. And that's the thing is when I take my hands off the controls, things are more beautiful than my plans had ever, ever, ever gotten. You know, things are better than I ever could have expected for myself. And so I sat down with my sponsor and my sponsor and I, it is like we share a brain sometimes, you know, my only I am so grateful that she is not suffering from the same stuff I'm suffering from at the same time, because it's so, you know, I stay accountable to that woman today. I have faith and trust that there is an answer that she is going to be presented with by God. You know, I believe that when she's talking to me, that she is coming from a place of love, understanding, and knowledge with her higher power. And so, you know, I go to her and we sat down with my fourth step and she was again, you know, I have this piece of paper in front of me and our book says a solitary self-appraisal is insufficient. You know, I am still delusional. I am still delusional. I have a paper in front of me. I know where I've been selfish and self-seeking, but I still don't see this whole picture. And she's able to point that out to me. And with that, you know, I was able to go on and, you know, I got this tremendous urge that I did not want to be this person anymore. You know, in the third step, I made a decision to continue on, to take a look and open my eyes to who I really was. And in the seventh step, I made the decision to turn it all over to God and I was done. For a few days. And I say that for a few days because I had to continue to go out and make the amends, but I needed to realize that steps 10 and 11 are not extra credit. They are not bonus steps. Those are steps I need to live in my life at all times. You know, and so, yes, after this amazing experience with my sponsor and I was flying high for a day or two, the book warns us if we rest on our laurels, not to, you know, we are headed for trouble. And what I found out is resting on our laurels means to lean on my action from days before. I may have had a Saturday where I went to my home or a Sunday where I went to my home group right after I work with a girl. We do a fifth step. Later that night, I went to a treatment meeting. I shared the message of Alcoholics Anonymous and my old brain would say, all right, I'm good till the next week. I'm good. You know, I need to practice these spiritual principles in all my affairs on a daily basis, minute to minute, hour to hour, week by week, day by day. I have to practice these. And the only way that I can keep that vessel open for God is to continue to be aware and to continue to be of action and to continue to build that relationship. I can pray and meditate today to something that I have a close and personal relationship with, that I have absolute faith has me through everything. Now, am I perfect at it? Absolutely not. I will go sometimes a week, at most a week, Where I want to stomp my feet like a toddler. I don't want to do what my sponsor is telling me to do. I want her to be on my side. I don't want her to point out my selfishness and self-centeredness. I want her to tell me how I'm right and they're wrong, and she doesn't do it. And eventually just the feeling of ugh, you know, just that feeling of ugh totally takes over. And I get to a point again, backed up into this corner, that I am just ready again to accept that I am not God and that I can't have control over my life. And I got to tell you, my life is not any different than it was 2 years ago. I still have those two children. I still have a house that I don't really like that much, but I make do. I still have the wonderful husband, and, you know, like I have a job that is wonderful. And the difference today is I see it through new eyes. I am awake to how wonderful my life is. I have become thankful that I have been given what I have instead of just desperately wanting stuff that I don't, you know? And, I'll end on this. One day my husband and I were driving in the country, and it was beautiful and sunny, and we were going to this lake, and he looked out. This is during the time period that I was spiritually sick, and he looked out and he just said, I see God everywhere and life is beautiful. And I sat next to him, one, jealous, two, bitter, three, wanting to throw up a little because I thought it was just, you know, so cheesy. And, this last summer we were driving the same exact route. We were going to the same exact lake. And I looked out and I looked at him and I said, isn't it beautiful that you can just see God absolutely everywhere and everything is just glowing like it's brand new. And that's what the steps have done. That's what the instructions have done through the big book for me. That is what God has done for me. And it has been a fantastic ride. And there's nothing I love more than sharing that freedom I've been able to find through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the instructions laid out in the book. And I love talking about AA. I love, being on the phone with women and just relating so much to where they're at and letting them know that there is a solution out there. There is hope for them, and they do not need to drink again for Alcoholics Anonymous to work. Thank you.
Thank you, Risa. That was incredible. There was so much in that I could relate to, and I have to tell you, my sponsor, since I came into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, has really pushed steps 10 and 11 to me. And I could really relate to a lot of what you said about being in the beginning of pandemic and that overwhelming loom of